numbers I read. I feel out of sorts. Like that you read that. I like that you looked down at your phone and was like, my name is Mark. I'm out of sorts.
No, because you usually said red light is on.
Right. It does have a red light. I should have said red light is on.
But that would have been like misleading in terms of where we are, in terms of what we're doing today. I like that it's different.
It's very different.
I just feel out of sorts.
Describe the room we're in.
I feel like we're at like a D&D King's like banquet. We have like fancy chairs with like nice decoration, a beautiful heavy gaming table.
There's a goblin head on a mount over there.
I think it's a mind flayer, actually.
Sure.
It is.
No, I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying, sure, I don't know the difference between a mind flayer and a goblin.
This is why I never played D&D with you.
Either way, I would have attacked it as soon as I came in.
It probably would have eaten your brain.
What level is it?
I don't know. Higher than what we're talking about tonight.
Let me roll my d20.
We're going to get into that later. Our game doesn't have dice.
Does not. That's good. We don't want it to have a lot of things.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we spout off at the mouth before playing a game of Mario Kart. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
Go on.
I think that was obviously me. I regret it. I was definitely humbled by you. What happened was, Mark was over my house. We've got Mario Kart on the Switch. Now I grew up playing Mario Kart on the Nintendo 64. I still got some game. I've been playing with my kids. They're 7 and under. Dominate them. Mark was over and I said, you want to play Mario Kart? And Mark was like, maybe. It sounded like you had not played a lot, that you were slow rolling it a little bit.
It's interesting that that's how you're framing it, because what I read from you was, I play a lot of this. I'm good at it. And I was like, I guess I'll play a game where Jason gets to gloat about beating me. I thought you were going to be the more proficient player.
Me too. And like most things I do, I don't come at it like, hey, do you want to play Mario Kart? I say, Mark, I'm going to dominate you in Mario Kart. Are you ready?
I was ready, in fact.
You were incredibly ready. You dominated me. I remember making the 150cc joke to you. I ask you, what do you want to play, 50cc? And you're like, 100's fine. I'm like, you don't want to play 150? I would have got destroyed on 150. Did I even make the top three? I don't think I made the top three. I think I finished out of the top three. Two AI computer players, Peach and, I don't know, Shy Guy beat me.
I don't remember. Not important. I felt a little bad when we did the second round because I picked my favorite set of tracks in the game and was like, oh, like he did good in the first one. We'll try another one. And it didn't go very well for you.
Once I could fall off the tracks, it was over. There was no coming back from that. Not to mention you like optimized your car. And so I didn't even like really realize that like the tires changed, the speed, the glider changed.
I'll look forward to our rematch in a couple months when you've had a chance to practice.
Yeah, I'm going to practice.
Great. The thing? No.
You don't know the structure yet. We have to give a little lead into what we're doing, and then we get to the sponsor, and then the thing.
Oh, here, I've got a better setup then. Where are we?
That's not even a segment anymore. You mean where are we physically?
I meant both.
We're in our local game store. We're at the game parlor, but it's more than just a game store. It's a game cafe, our go-to spot for mochi waffles. We're recording live. They were nice enough to give us their adjacent D&D space upstairs next door. And the idea for today's show is to narrow in on components and materials for our game.
Under One Sky.
We're working with an artist right now. His name is Mark Gagne. And now it matters what the components are. If we're going to continue to use an open grid, for example, Mark, well, we don't really need art for that. If it's an actual game board with a base where we're setting tiles onto it, that needs art. The tiles, what size and the material are going to dictate the art that sits atop of them. There's some things where I think about maybe resin pieces. You can't put the same art that you can put on a resin piece that you can put on a piece of cardboard or chipboard. So today we're doing something special. We're not here at our game store to play games.
Aww.
Maybe if there's time, we'll sneak one. We're here to break into games, pull some games out, touch some pieces. We know we don't play enough games. we don't have the knowledge base that other game designers have. So we're going to ask you to bear with us today as we literally fumble through this episode. We're going to open games. We're going to talk about what we like, what we don't like, and think about what is feasible for us as first-time game designers.
I can't wait until we find some resin pieces to get a hold of, because hearing you say, oh, maybe this is what we use, is what I'm hearing. But I'm also starting to get the impression that we're thinking about two very different kinds of resin pieces.
We might be. Well, I don't even know what resin is.
Find out today with us.
I did think about you, though, when I saw there's a table that's a chessboard downstairs, and I thought, oh, that's what Mark wants. He wants to just ship a table.
Not that fancy, but a nice, like, beautiful wood cutout that could be on the table.
Before we get to that today, today's episode is sponsored by Game Parlor. The Game Parlor is a destination for people to come together and have fun playing from a huge selection of hundreds of games spanning from old classics to new challenges. Whether it be date night, a family outing, a small group, or a large party, they want to provide a welcoming and comfortable space for people to meet together over tabletop games. Game Parlor is a San Francisco treasure for us. The games are really just a bonus. Onitama, Gloomhaven, Splendor, sure, they're on the shelf, but those are awesome. Also the names of their incredible mochi waffles and fancy teas. Help us with our goal of getting a misplay item on the menu. Visit their website at gameparlor.com. And if you're in the Bay Area, you have to stop by Game Parlor, connecting people through food and tabletop games.
The thing.
Can you say it like we're in the D&D room. Can you say it in a D&D way?
The room quiets. Make an alertness check.
We still don't have any dice yet.
You failed. The thing approaches.
The thing today is exploring components in games. And we have to keep in mind that we do not have the vocabulary for this. We didn't call our podcast, "We Know Everything About Games." We call it The Misplay. Obviously, one day when we know everything about games, we're going to have to make some new headers around here. But until then, Mark, define punchboard, resin, chipboard, blueboard, acrylic, bakelite.
That's a lot of talking of a lot of words really quickly. I might have punchboard.
We're going to be talking about game pieces. We're probably going to refer to material incorrectly, call something that's resin, acrylic, confuse our cardboards, or not even know what it is we're holding. We want to apologize. We mean your games, no disrespect. The two key pieces today for us and Under One Sky are the board and the tiles. The only other real component in our game is the constellation cards and the star chart. Those are going to be cardboard. They're going to be cards. We're not going to go into depth or detail on those. Today, we really want to focus on the board and the tiles. So we have a set of games in front of us. We're going to talk about them game by game. Then we're going to get some more games. Can we first say what, if anything, Mark, what are we looking for?
Oh, this is where we're going to like have wildly different opinions, right? Because I'm going to say, I want my really beautiful, like shiny stars. I want a deep, like textured night sky that the stars then like sit against and pop off from. I want the components to serve. I want the tiles and the board to serve this serene, contemplative, quiet, dare I say tense, evening under that night sky.
This is where I have to introduce you and maybe some of the audience to the term landed cost. Landed cost for board games is the total cost to get your game from the manufacturer to the warehouse or fulfillment center ready to sell. That's landed cost. The cost it's going to take you to get the game ready to ship and sell. And then with landed cost, Mark, there's a 5x rule. Whatever your landed cost is, your MSRP, your retail price, is going to be 5 times that. So if your landed cost is $8, if it costs us $8 to manufacture and ship to our warehouse for fulfillment, then our MSRP, our retail price, is going to be $40. That's how much we have to sell the game for. We don't have a $40 game. It's weird to say that. I don't want to downplay us. I don't believe we have a $40 game. I think we have to keep our game sub 30. But I don't know what I don't know yet. There's absolutely, we talked before about putting lights on the board and placing a piece down and then the light shoots up.
You.
Yes.
My aesthetically beautiful, I think, is very attainable. But you're right. I don't know what those costs would entail.
So I also think at some point during our conversation today, we should be thinking about price. First game I grabbed, Mark, intentional, is Quirkle. Have you played Quirkle before?
No.
I have. It's a puzzle game, but it was what I initially designed. The prototype that we've been using was designed based on Quirkle. the original prototype you ever played, I made the pieces the same size as Quirkle pieces. Quirkle is just, it's just a sack. It's a bag of tokens. They are wooden. They are about 1¼ inches. They're not cubes, but they're squares.
I see our orange piece.
It does. It looks like our, it looks like the orange piece. I mean, in this, in the, there's a lot of different versions of Quirkle. There's travel version, there's deluxe, there's probably other things. This looks like it's pretty much just the classic version. It's a bag of, I don't know, it's 100 tiles in here. Quirkle doesn't have a board. Your table is the board. We talked about this early on when we were designing our game. We had to have the spots for our pieces because you can push them outside of where they began. Quirkle doesn't have that. When you place it, that's where it is the whole game. That piece never moves. And then people place pieces next to it.
These look well loved.
They've lasted, right? I mean, that box looks old. That looks like the pieces are light. Like this is, I assume this is some wood. These are wood pieces.
Yeah, they feel light to the touch. I like the paint coating.
Mine at home, for my version of Quirkle, they're thinner. If you look at the printing on them, I don't know what is used to put the image. So on each Quirkle piece, there's a colored logo. They look like clubs or circles or stars, some sort of press.
Yeah, I was going to say like adventurous stamp, like a paint stamp.
They're not centered on all of the pieces.
I like the feel of them in my hand. I like the size. I like the texture of the paint.
Box it, ship it, we're done.
All done. Okay, let's go.
These are the tiles. They're going to be little wood Quirkle squares. I think that's the starting point because that's what started me on this manufacturing 3D printing path.
Okay. Well, then we should go into, since you picked a targeted idea, we should go into my targeted idea. I grabbed a Sagrada because you were talking about this style of board. You were talking about a raised cardboard board where the tiles would slot in and be firm to facilitate the rotation of the board. So let's open Sagrada. We can talk about the dice as a tile proxy.
Yeah.
And then we can look at the Sagrada board.
Okay.
Because that's the important piece.
I've never played. I've seen it. So we've got the game board out. They are shaped like a cathedral window, right?
Yeah. It's a dice drafting game. So dice get rolled, you draft your dice, and you try to assemble specific patterns and configurations of your dice in your grid that you would draw onto your star chart analogy.
Oh, they have a star chart.
And then just for fun, here are your dice. These are very like D&D style dice. They've got like a little bit of color to them. They're a little bit translucent.
I'm really looking forward to slotting these into. Now, this is the gaps in terminology. Whether this is punch board, chip board, this is some sort of cardboard cardstock. It's pretty thick. There's basically two layers. Do you slot something in? Does that move?
Yeah. So in this one, you would slide your star chart, your pattern card. You're going to slot it in underneath your grid so that you know what you're building towards on your grid.
Oh, okay. And interesting, I think it's interesting that you don't use the whole top half of the board. The whole top half of the board is just theme.
Well, you have to put yourself into the narrative of the game, right? You're the stained glass mason. So that's how you get your chart art or your board art.
And so this is close. This is a 5x4 grid. We have a 5x5 grid. I'm dropping a die in. I like setting it in and things. One of the things that we have to do in our game is we have to move the pieces frequently. Once it gets set, there's a good chance that piece is going to get moved on somebody else's turn or maybe your turn in the future. So you have to place and then move another die. One of the things I noticed right there is because the dice are pretty high, mm-hmm. that I'm like tripping over as I lift it.
Yeah, well, like imagine this move. So I'm making more clutter. I think this board is a little small for, I think, what my taste for the game would be. But like imagine trying to make this move. Orange.
Yeah.
But you can easily feel the rotation. Like it's easy to rotate this board and not disrupt what's happening in the grid.
Yeah, that's really important is that when we rotate our board that we can't have anything popping out. I a couple of times with a 3D printed prototype because it's a grid and it's open on the bottom, I've hit something on the table and a tile had dislodged itself and I didn't know where it went.
A likely story.
It ended up exactly where I needed it, though. But this is where I initially thought we were going to be. Some sort of punchboard, cardboard grid where there was a little cutout for the tiles to be held.
Well, let's take a pause and think about that for a minute, because this is true of the board that we've been testing on, the 3D printed plastic. Because the question to me becomes, once you solve for like whatever board you're going to use and how it's going to rotate, the question for me would be, well, do I want to have to pick up the piece to pull it out of the slotted spot, or do I just want to be able to slide the pieces on the board? There's a different tactile quality to those two ways of designing the components and having the game play. I haven't really thought about it because we've only ever played with pickup and move, but just being able to push things on the board would also kind of feel nice. It would feel more like chasing the sky.
When I got to play Onitama, I liked pushing the pieces up, down, diagonally. I liked that feel. That was the first time where I ever said, oh, maybe I'm wrong, because I was against it in the beginning. I was against any neoprene mat or an open board. I wanted the cutouts. I wanted to be able to place it inside of it. I also thought it was important to hold it when it gets rotated and moved. But I played around with the Onitama neoprene mat and I turned it and it was okay, but you'd have to be careful. You'd have to be careful doing it. You couldn't just spin it like you can this Socrata board, right? I just spun that around quickly. You can't do that with, you know, even just an open chessboard. Unless the tiles have some real weight to them.
Which you're against, because we know that weight going up increases shipping costs.
And that's what we're going to get to eventually when we talk about, you know, the acrylic pieces versus what would be, you know, cardboard. It's going to be significantly different. I don't know what those costs are yet. I can only speculate that they're more. So I'm imagining the Socrata board bigger.
Yeah, the board that I envision for this would have to be substantially larger than the Socrata board.
But that's also a constraint that we have to think about, especially as a first game. And it's one of the reasons why I pushed away in our early design choices away from a 7x7 grid. I did not want that big of a board. I didn't want that big of a box. I wanted a small box. Small boxes cost less to make. Small boxes cost less to ship. So the way I think about our board size, it's our box size. I think whatever size our board is, that is the size of our box.
I think that's fair. By extension, I think that means we happen to grab larger boxes than you probably want for any of the games that we're going to be talking about in our first set. So probably in the next set, we need to go grab some boxes that are a little bit smaller and really imagine those boards.
So part of what we're doing today, Mark, is learning about the games, not just guessing what everything is going to be. We want to know the difference between maybe acrylic and resin. So even though I felt pretty confident that Quirkle pieces are wood, I looked. Quirkle, they call it painted wood. It's wood. They are an inch and a quarter by an inch and a quarter. And the other versions of the game, there are acrylic tiles. But the one that we have, painted wood, that's what they're calling them.
So in that same spirit, we went and tried to figure out how to describe the Socrata board, and kind of where we landed in what we found was it's a two-layer cardboard where you have the second layer serves as the frame that the dice slot into, which gave it that nice huggy feel for the dice to stay in.
I have a 5x5 grid in front of me, Mark. Tack! I'm So Bad pointed this game out a while ago, and I think there's different versions of this as well. I think there's many different print runs of what this game is, and I know it's abstract. You're placing wooden pieces again, so like Quirkle, like High Tide. The board is
beautiful.
Really?
I think so.
Okay.
Look at that.
So let's describe what the material is. It feels like a Monopoly board.
But like the corners look nice and finished. The material feels solid, like it's sturdy. It doesn't have that fold that you would imagine in a full Monopoly board. And yeah, I think having the fold goes a long way.
Right. And if we were using a board like this for our game, we don't want to have a fold. Again, I think we want the grid to be the size of the box. This box is too big. This looks like it's about, what's that look like, 10 by 10 inches?
Your guess is going to be better than mine.
We're going to want to be smaller than that. But it's painted nice, right? That's an interesting picture. It's a wooden, looks like a tree. There's another design on the other side of it. So there's a 3x3 board, it looks like. So you could probably have two different variants of the game.
It's easy for me to see the night sky art that we could ask Mark to put on this style of board.
And that is, you know, that is the reason we have to figure this out, so that we can give the artist the direction that they need. The pieces are different shape. They stand differently. They're upright. And I don't know how to play the game, but I can see from the picture that pieces stack, so they go on top of each other, and there's some abstract component to the game. Board rotates. Mark stacked some tiles, and then he rotated the board to see if they stayed where they were. So even stacked, they stayed. So there's no grid. The tiles are just being placed on top of the board. There's an outline, there's a square that shows you the space, but it's not locked into a grid that we use in our 3D printing or the punch board style of Sagrada.
I would be a little worried as you get into the late game in this style of where am I going to grab to rotate the board? Because the first rotation I made is I just put my hand on the board, pressed down and turned, right? And even now I'm already seeing a little bit of motion with tiles on the board.
So Mark has put about 20 tiles on the board and he is rotating it.
And so imagining trying to, I guess you do it by the corners, but it doesn't necessarily stand up to the standard of rotation that we're looking for with this particular setup.
I think that's a really good point. Just watching these, yeah, right? That piece just fell off the board and I didn't do it that hard. I was almost sold on that. I was almost like, that's probably inexpensive, flat board. Because I imagine putting the punch outs costs more. There's no way it can't.
It's going to be heavier. It's going to be more. The pieces in terms of tile makeup feel very similar to the Quirkle pieces and the High Tide pieces.
The thing that's different, there's no design on it. It's just a color. You know, that's something we could have done. I don't think we want to. I think we want stars popping. We want bright colors. We want to draw people into it. But when we were originally talking about the game, I know you had a lot of thoughts about just being purely abstract, and they would just be nice colors.
I mean, this very closely, and I'm sure this is why I'm so bad recommended it, lines up with that vision that I had. I see a beautiful board, I see shades of wood, and if we weren't doing the theme, this is the direction that I would be advocating for.
What's the next box you brought up?
I brought a game that I found at Gen Con the first year that we went 2 years ago called The Night Cage. And I want you to pay particular attention to the tiles because it's going to be a different kind of tile than we've put hands on so far.
I remember the space this was in. I remember the setup. I don't think I was there. Did you play test? I feel like we separated for a little bit. And then the next thing I know, you were in this like dark dungeon playing this game.
I got a very quick, tasteful walkthrough of the game. I think this board is beautiful. This would be another board I would point to in like when I envision what our board could look like. This is obviously too big. We don't want a folding board, but I like this glossy feel.
This feels different than the tack board. Like this feels more expensive.
It feels smooth. It's beautiful though. Like
it is.
Look at how the contrast pops on the texture of the board. This is more, I think this is probably more expensive, but it is like visually a step up from the tack board that we were looking at.
Now it's not the art, like this isn't an art style that I prefer, but I can see how on this board we could put the art style we want. Yeah, it has like a matte, like when you put your hand on it, it has like a matte feel and it has a painted grid. This is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 by 7.
We're cursed.
This is how big it would have been.
Well, and then let me point you to, here's our tile.
Okay, so now this is the first time that I've had in my hand what I believe is the just chipboard, cardboard tile. Because I've seen it, we've talked about it, but now I'm holding it. It's got rounded, so it's a square, but it's got rounded corners. This feels better than I thought it was going to feel.
By weight, they don't feel that different to me than the wood that we've been handling.
We should have brought a scale.
Next time.
But there's definitely a difference. This is less than the High Tide wood pieces. It feels nice, like the paint on it, like that's a like gloss on this tile. And you get to have two different images, right? So on one side, there's this, would our tiles? Yeah, our tiles would have the same image on both sides, right? I mean, you could save money and do it only on one. You could put the logo of the game on one side and then the star on the other side. You could have it plain. Those small things will just adjust cost a little bit. So I kept thinking about how this would slot into like a Sagrada board. Right now it's like the Night Cage board is like a chess board. It's open, but there's squares. You can slide it. So you could set it, and then I want to move another piece. So I set my piece down, and then I slide. Yeah, the slide's nice. Slide it.
That's nice. It's clean.
We need more space to rotate this one.
Fold it up, and then you could feel what it would be like to rotate it if the board were a quarter of the size.
What do they call this, Mark, when the board folds up in the quarters?
Give the board a rotation. I was saying it looks like you're doing it kind of aggressively, but like the surface area of the tiles in this game feel like they grip a little bit better. And I'm not sure if that's texture of the what's on the board or surface area of the tile, but they do stay for like a reasonably quick rotation of the board, and players playing our game would hopefully be careful enough.
Especially once you know, you know. But yeah, I'm being aggressive with that, and it's staying.
This would also be a nice size. You've got your, like, we're looking at a 3x3 version of this, but you could imagine the 5x5 coming out. Like, here's your 5. That could be your board. And it is, like, close to the quarter board of the box that you're looking at.
It's got to be smaller. Those pieces have got to be smaller. I would say that is, they've got to be about 1 3/4. Like, that's not quite 2 inches. I think we don't want to be that large. Again, it's, you know, it's cost, right? That's the alternative to the Sagrada board, where it's a nice quality flat board with cardboard or chipboard tokens. These feel much nicer than I thought they would end up being. And they're not that thick. What's it like to like grab a piece from here? I guess I couldn't move that tile. You're just sliding. Oh, it's pure. You couldn't slide on a diagonal though. So you would have to pick up if it was being blocked by that corner, but that still feels okay.
Yeah, I guess we're never going to get perfectly away from the need to pick up and replace pieces.
Yeah, because you can't slide through a diagonal, but that's okay. That's fine.
Learning that here does say to me, well, it puts your in-cut version of the board, the Sagrada style board, more on the table. Because if you're going to have the pickup in place anyway, you might as well have the pickup in place and be most resistant to the rotation problem.
So doing, you know, our additional research, they call it a quad fold board. We know that's not what we're going to have. But they describe the quality of the Knight Cage board as this high density cardboard or chipboard with a saturated black finish and white scratch art style illustrations. Saturated black finish, so.
That's the part that I would want to take back with me, because I'm like, oh, a saturated midnight blue finish.
Right. When we were thinking about doing this, Mark, I think this was the game that we both thought about first. This is the first game where we want to hold the pieces and see how it feels. Hive.
I just played it this weekend. They feel great.
Hive comes, the pieces are in a round zip-up bag, so it's not a cloth bag. It's kind of like nylon. These pieces have a really distinct sound. It's satisfying to make that clanking sound with them.
They feel nice and heavy in the hand too, but hopefully wouldn't be prohibitively expensive.
You know, they probably get away with it because that's all there is. That's the component to the game. That's it. You don't have a game board. Like Quirkle, you just play on the table that you're playing on. And I played Hive one time and I don't really remember how to play it, but these are hexagons and you are lining them up and you're moving them around, you're collecting them. What are you doing?
You're trying to trap your opponent's queen. So you surround, you actually put a queen on the board. So my objective would be to surround your queen so that she can't move and is completely surrounded. So I'm missing a hex, but that's the game.
So, and it has about as many pieces as we would have, as many tiles. Now, these are heavier. These are heavier than the wood pieces. They are a little bit bigger than the Quirkle pieces. They're thick like the original Quirkle pieces. I'm certain that's the whole point, is the feel in your hand of this game is a big selling point of Hive.
From having just played this game over the weekend, I would also say the movement of the pieces in the game is very endemic to the theme of the game. Pieces move and they feel like the insects that are moving.
Oh, do they move differently, each one?
The grasshopper especially, because grasshopper jumps, right? So its move in the game is I get to pick it up and I get to splat it on the end of the next line. The theme of the game is really well embedded in the mechanics of this game.
I'm going to rearrange them a little bit to kind of make it like it's our board and how we would move them. Assume it's on a flat board and we could slide or lift them. I feel like with this quality of component, you wouldn't want to stick it in a punch board and leave it there. I feel like I would want it out, not locked away. I don't know if that makes sense. I feel like locking it away kind of like closes it off.
The more we talk about the raised two-layer board and a more flat board, if that's our kind of like main question, do we want the raised board or the flat board? I would worry a little bit about the raised board distracting from the ambient that you're trying to create with it being a sky. Having the night sky and then having this very like intrusive, I think is how it feels in the way that you're describing the pieces like sticking in and being stuck there. Having a really intrusive border, I think would take away from the sense of the game being in the sky.
Oh, that's interesting. I keep thinking about how with a grid, let's say they are punch board and there's spots for them, right? I put the tile in its piece and it doesn't move. We get control over what the picture looks like. If you were playing on a chessboard, you know how some people don't put their pieces right in the center of the square? It's like a little bit off. I always watch Magnus Carlsen like adjust all his pieces when he starts the game so they're all exactly where he wants them. It makes the end result more photo ready when it's like locked in and people don't have their pieces a little off center, but I guess that's not how the real sky is, right?
Correct.
I don't know. I've never moved a star before. That's a theme problem for later on.
We're just gonna shove that one under the rug.
All right. What do you think these pieces are made of? I've looked up what they're called. What do you think these are called?
These are the acrylic pieces.
These are called the high density resin, often referred to as bakelite. I came across that word in our research. No idea what it was. So Hive is bakelite.
I'll say these don't do it for me.
Really? I thought this was pinnacle. I thought this was what you really wanted, this clack.
It's not about the clack and click.
Because stars don't click or clack.
You have to go back to how stuck I am on the vision. If you think back to that board that I sent you from Gen Con, it was this crystalline quality. You know, like you get the like rock at the rock shop and you hold it up to the light and it's frosted.
Sure.
It's glossy, but it's not glossy, it's dusty, but it's beautiful. That's more what I'm looking. These are very glossy and really well finished, but they're not dusty the way that I'm like envisioning the night sky. And you can see the light fade as it comes off the center of the images. And that's where that like resin dust that I'm looking for comes from. So it's not this for me. But these are beautiful, but not the way that I want them to be.
I'm looking closely at how the image is set on them. And it's actually indented. I don't, there's got to be a term for that.
Laser cutter,
you nailed it.
Nailed it in one guess.
Sounds expensive.
Sometimes when you talk fancy, you sound right.
I will say, Mark, that Hive has the box size we're looking for. I think we want to be about the same size as Hive, if not maybe just a little bit smaller. Interestingly, the next game I have is another square box that's just a little bit smaller, and it's Patchwork. Now I'm opening up Patchwork. And this is, it looks like it's themed. There's just a box with a whole bunch of, you know, pieces that have buttons on them and they're different shapes. I see a lot of the initial shapes that we had originally used as stars. There's some wooden components as well. I think those are for keeping score. I've got to dump all of them out to get down to the board. Now this is a board that is about the size we want to be, I think. I think, again, guessing that board is probably about 6 by 6 inches. It's a very popular game. I haven't played it, though. But inside, there's a couple of different boards with different designs on them. I'm sorry, this is not a how-to-play podcast. Mark is taking, we brought our 3D printed pieces, and he's putting them to the board to see if it's approximately the size that we've been using. And it is. It's pretty close. It's a little bit bigger, just a touch bigger than what we've been using. I would say this board is similar to the tack board. Kind of has a different corner style. They're not folded over. The tack boards had, I don't know, the kind of that classic fold lip over the board. This has got just, it goes to the edge.
This is more the heavy duty, thicker cardboard without the finish or the wrap.
Were you rotating the board to see if they stayed or not?
Yeah, this didn't pass the rotate test for me. The surface of the board is also like fine, right? But it's not, there's nothing like specific or distinct about it. Like the way Night Cage felt, that board felt.
Yes.
The talk board felt too. This feels, it feels like it has a little bit of texture to it, but not in any way that I'm like, oh, this contributes to what we're looking for or doesn't contribute to what we're looking for.
We would want that to be a punch board. If we went with that, I think we'd want punch board. I think we'd want to lock it in because this is not going to pass that rotate test. The pieces in Patchwork, They're also cardboard chips, very similar to the Night Cage. They're painted different. They have a different feel. They don't have like that smooth satin gloss finish. This feels a little bit more... I'm themed with the game, right? It's like quilty and cloth.
I was really hoping to feel something a little more clothy.
I don't know.
A little more matted, like the dragon, like the magic card sleeves that we used to use. That would have been a nice feel for this.
If we were doing the Night Cage board, you can have the thin chipboard. With a board like Patchwork, where we would want to do the punches, we need a thicker, you have to have a thicker piece because you can't drop it. Then it'll be flat. You won't be able to get it out. So the pieces would have to be thick. It's interesting how it changes the cost. You're paying more for a better finish on the board, but then you're not... Maybe you're not paying as much for the thickness and the weight of it. So quick search, Patchwork is made primarily of high density cardboard and the wood pieces. There's actually a note here that say they tear and fray a little bit on the edges. So, you know, one of the things that we're not getting to see, Mark, is how the games originally come. So this must have originally been in a punch board and you pop them out. They don't come already separated like this. So they kind of get frayed a little bit when you do that. I think it actually fits the theme of this game well to fray the edges of that.
This is probably one of those moments where I'm going to reveal myself as both a snob and as a person who doesn't know anything about board games, because I haven't played Patchwork. I'm sure it's fun. You must have grabbed it for a reason. But when I look at the components for this game, I see every other board game that I see when I like go to Gen Con or when I go to another convention. Everything just looks the same to me, and this would not grab me in a way where I'm like, oh yeah, I should check this game out.
I will say I haven't played Patchwork. It's an incredibly popular tile placement game. I think it's close to... our genre and what we're doing. My answer to what you just said there, I've thought about, because you've been saying that since you came back from Gen Con. You've commented to me many times that all the games just look the same when you walked around the floor. And I thought about that, and I'm going to speculate on what I think the answer is. And it's money, it's cost. That when you are building a game, if you are doing custom things, they cost more. Think about our game for a second. We're using what is likely going to be square or rounded squares for tiles. We don't have to. We could make them a custom star shape. Guess what? Costs more money. Costs more money to make those molds that don't exist already when you can already just grab what they have. I think, and it's the reason you see wooden square cubes everywhere, right? It's just a super cost-efficient way to keep track of score. And it works. People know what it is, and it helps them understand the game, I think, just a little bit quicker. Oh, I know what that piece does. It's a scoring cube. And I think it really just comes down to cost. I mean, there is so little margin in creating and selling a board game that, yeah, you just got to make little cubes or... that's why most everything is cardboard and chipboard. Yeah, no, it would be great. Like I said, it would be great. Let's put lights under our board. Let's shoot lights up into the sky. It's magnetic when you place it. There's a little Arduino.
I think that's a little bit unfair of a way to just say get out of jail free. Sure. We're all limited by the resources that we have, how much it costs to make a game. We're not quitting our day jobs to do this. Like we haven't already got $2 million in backers on our crowdfunding campaign, right? But look at the games that we've looked at tonight. They're like, I think Talk especially and Night Cage especially for me. I know you're less into the art, but like there is something substantially different about the way those two games present than 13 games that look just like Patchwork to me.
Where are we though? I think our game is closer to Patchwork than it is the Night Cage. But you want to be closer. You want to be over here with the Night Cage.
In terms of gameplay, sure. Patchwork is a tile placement game. Our game is a tile placement game. Night Cage is a tile placement game. But I think it's about being more intentional than just saying, oh, I'm constrained by my components. Like, I think there are decisions you can make within that. Like, I even think we were just talking about it with Hive. Like, what would be the difference between doing the laser cut for the Hive pieces and doing whatever embossing process they do for the Azul pieces? Like, it's the same material. They present very differently. I think they're both very effective for their games. I think there's room to be more creative within the constraints of the components that I just want to keep pushing for, because I don't just want to be like, you know, we're going to be at Gen Con this year. I don't want to be just another game on the floor that looks the same as every other game that everybody walks by. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to aspire to.
I don't either, and I respect it. I want to talk to you about a term called Landed Cost.
Go on.
All right, Mark. I've never played this game. I've seen it online. I've seen it on social media. It has beautiful art. I really like the art. It's called Flamecraft. But look what I have right here.
Ooh, Jason brought me a cloth mat.
I have a cloth mat. Now,
what kind of cloth?
It's neoprene, right? It's not. It's like a Magic the Gathering placemat, right? What do we call those?
Playmat.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good at this.
Our one-in-one guessing is on point tonight.
Now, it feels nice. I like the feeling. I actually think the art that they've put on this is really nice. I could see Mark putting a sky here. I could see the artwork being on this. I was strongly against these type of mats initially. I said, no way, don't want it. Again, when I played Onitama, I said, oh, I like this. This feels nice. The pieces felt nice. Mark is trying to rotate it though. I was gonna get to that.
Go on.
That's the problem we run into. And maybe it's the material on the, this is meant to be grippy. The bottom of this neoprene mat is grippy. It's meant to be. It's not meant to be rotated. Maybe there is a different material you can put on the bottom that lets you rotate it smoothly. Right now, you can't rotate this. You're picking up the table and rotating it.
It's a really different kind of gameplay experience. Under One Sky, the escape room.
Now, this game has wooden pieces as well. They're shaped like little dragons.
Feels like we've stepped into an anime.
It also has some cardboard tokens and chips.
I like these pieces. They feel a little bit lighter than some of the other wooden components, and the finish is definitely different.
So here's where I want to point something out. What's really different about these, Mark, they're not squares. These are, you know, again, it's probably a mold. You probably have to have a custom mold, unless they have like a classic star shape. They probably have some regular looking stars. But I want you to imagine placing this on the board and not being stuck and confined by a square. You can still have a grid and you place it inside. I like that. I like not placing a square tile. I like holding a different shape that's unique, that's not like every other game.
I'm sold. Let's go. Box it, ship it.
Done.
We've traded jobs. I'd like to introduce you to a new concept, though. Landed cost.
Go on. But you know what I mean? Can you imagine? I know it's really hard for the podcast listeners right now, as Mark and I are sitting here talking about, we're holding the pieces, you're just listening and hearing. We're trying to describe it. But can you imagine not... We've been playing with cubes and squares for months. Wouldn't it feel nice just to have like a wooden, so these are wooden pieces like Quirkle, like High Tide, but shaped like stars, fully colored with a little imaging on them. And then you set it where you want.
Yeah. No arguments, no notes, no objection.
Box it, ship it.
Except the neoprene mat because it doesn't rotate.
Yes. But okay, imagine this rotated as smoothly as the Night Cage board did. Just imagine it did. Would you like this feel? Would you like playing? Would this capture night for you, that feeling versus the cardboard board?
I'm not sure. My gut reaction is I want to leave that into Mark's hands to draw me into the board with the art that he designs, which continues to lead me away from I don't want a raised grid on the board. I want to be invited into the expanse of the board.
I guess my question is more just the feel of it. Your hands on it right now, compare it to the gloss black of the Night Cage.
I think I like the smoothness of the gloss, but I don't have a good reason for that. I mean, these pieces that you were looking at do slide really nicely on this, because I was like, oh, there are some materials that aren't going to move well on this. Like, the neoprene mats are good on card game play mats because it makes the cards easier to pick up, but like, that's not a consideration here.
Looking up what the mat is made out of, they call it neoprene, they call it non-slip, which makes me think they have neoprene with slip.
Excuse me, can I have some slippery neoprene, please?
It has stitched edges, which I really like. The printing is applied through a thermal transfer printing, which fuses the ink into fabric fibers.
Let me introduce you to this concept that you've been educating me on today. It's called landed cost.
Landed cost. That is something that when we walk out of the game parlor today and we have a sense of maybe where we're leaning towards, we have to ask about cost. I think that's the next driver. How much is this mat on neoprene going to cost versus the board like the Night Cage or a board like Patchwork and have like those three different scales.
Jason, I brought one more game just because I wanted to feel something different. I have a feeling you're not going to like the component because of this boogeyman that we're calling landed cost. Let's talk about these coins from Splendor.
Okay. I love the coins from Splendor.
They're heavy. They feel good in the hand. The finish on the image sides feels like something that I would enjoy sliding across. This finish would go really well with the way we want Starlight to present on the coins. What do you think?
100% out. I don't even hesitate. It is the weight of those. And it's not, I'm not even thinking about the cost to make them. It's the cost to ship them. And the issues you even run into shipping things that are kind of that heavy because you have to secure them inside the box so they don't damage the even just the outside of the box because they have, they're poker chips. They're even like heavier than poker chips. I love playing with them when I'm playing. When it's not my turn to do something, I'm shuffling them just like I would be at a poker table. I really like them. They feel great. It's 100% out. We cannot have that heavy of a piece. And if you say, well, let's just make them lighter, then it's not the same thing.
Okay.
Worth bringing up. I like the way this mat even rolls up and puts away. Mark, for our last game, I saved it. Maybe this was the game and not Hive that we were most eager to kind of pull out and look at. Because when I think about our grid and our pieces and kind of the gameplay, I always come back to Azul. Azul is a game played with tiles on a 5x5 grid. Their boards are different though, because each player has a board that has different uses. It's not just a board or a grid. It has where you're preparing to place your tiles, and then it has where you actually place them on the board, and then there's space to do your scoring. Each player gets their own board. There isn't one shared board. Then inside there's a nice cloth bag, and then we have these, I believe, and we'll look it up, acrylic pieces or resin pieces. And they have different colors. There's five different colors with different designs on them. The design is very abstract. It reminds me of the first things I ever requested on Fiverr for us. This was kind of the example that I gave them. I said, look at Azul pieces and think about how our pieces move. They're smaller. They're the smallest. They're a little bit bigger than dice.
And this board, the player boards here are still bigger than the board that we would want for our board, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because it's doing all these other things.
Right. There are features that are present on the Azul game board that we won't need.
Now, interesting, they have one component that we haven't talked about is they have shared pools. There's like five little circles that go around the board that the tiles get placed on for you to choose from. We haven't talked about, that's probably a small piece of our game somewhere. That could be on the board. It could rotate. The shared pool could rotate with the board, or it could be a separate little pod like this circle where the stars are placed.
These have a very similar feel to me as the Hive pieces, but they're a little bit lighter. So I would assume it's a little bit of a different material.
Yeah, and I mean, just their size as well, right? They're a quarter of the size.
I guess.
But they do feel less dense. How do you feel holding a piece like this versus the chipboard from the Night Cage? You know, you've talked about all games look the same. Does this stand out?
I think this and Night Cage stand out different for different reasons. Night Cage really does stand out on the artwork, whether you like it or not. Like, the art is incredibly distinct. And this is actually what I liked about Eschaton at Gen Con this year. The art is just so unique, and it had the annoying little wooden cubes that I don't like, but I didn't care when I was playing Eschaton because the way everything else presented was so unique and interesting. But I mean, this is clearly a very well-loved game because players have played with these to the point where the patterns are not visible on the tiles anymore.
And that's an interesting note, right? That these pieces kind of change over time as they get used. It's not even a negative. That seems like a positive. Now people are more likely to buy a new copy of our game, right? If they're still playing after, you know, 100, 200 plays, then, you know, maybe they'll get a second copy.
But I mean, that's also something you could easily solve for by just having a different, you know, you could look at Hive and be like, oh, well, the Hive bugs aren't going to disappear the way whatever this printing process was for the Azul tiles?
I will say I don't have a strong opinion on Azul tiles versus the wooden pieces. I don't. To me, it doesn't make that big of a difference. I like the way it clicks. It's smooth, but I don't think it changes my game experience. Does that make sense? There's just not enough differentiation. You know, they're both cubes. What I think does change it, though, if we're thinking about custom stars when we're talking about looking at the Flamecraft dragons, that would change it for me. I think that would be enough differentiation.
Well, I was going to say, the Azul pieces, even with the patterns kind of rubbing away, I can kind of get the aspect of light and the way that light would reflect on these. The colored tiles are different to me than the black and white in Hive.
I'm curious, on a crowded board, I'm putting the Azul tiles on their 5x5 grid, knowing that the board is smaller than we want it to be. So I place and then I move. Did you see what I just did? I went to grab a piece and I just knocked three in a line out. I think this would almost dictate punch board with the slots. If you're doing these bigger pieces that are trickier to grab or not giving enough, you know, finger space around them, it doesn't function the way our game does. You don't just move these diagonally where you want them to be.
I think that's one of the things where you'd have to start being willing to adjust the grid size, where I actually think what you would eventually want is you would want, if you're moving away from the really snug presentation, which is really all we've ever played with, but I think to make pieces physically accessible to us, you'd have to go smaller piece, bigger space by some amount so that you can get inside to make the manipulations of the board that we're going to need in our game.
That's a really good point. I know I've been really focused on this exact 3D printing to fit the spaces. But yeah, you're right. That's a really good point to raise.
But I think that's just, it's another factor in what would go in between deciding between the raised board and the flat board. And if we're really bound by cost, maybe you go with the raised board because it allows you to go smaller and gives you access to the pieces. Have we come up to any decisions yet?
That's a good question. We didn't talk about whether or not we were going to walk out of here knowing what we wanted.
I'm not ready to say that I know.
Right. Me either. And I think I'm just highlighting that. It was never the goal to walk out of here saying, this is what our game is going to be. The goal was for us to start talking about it with a little bit of clarity. So quick search, Azul pieces, they are called a high quality resin. While often compared to Bakelite, they're not the same thing. They're not technically the same thing. So they are a little bit different than the Hive pieces. And they have screen printed or embossed directly onto the material. The goal was just to come in and put our hands on components and walk away with a sense of, oh, I like this. I don't like this as much. This feels cool. Oh, this doesn't feel like what I imagined it would. It was a beginning. But I would say a quick summary for me today was I really like the way the neoprene mat felt. I would love to see it with a non-grippy bottom so that we could rotate it. I think the art on the neoprene mat could look really, really good. I think it could look good on the night cage as well. I did really like the quality of cardboard pieces that the night cage had in both its board and the tiles. I wasn't blown away by any of the resin or Bakelite that we held. And I've moved a little away from the idea of punchboard cutouts. What's a quick summary for you from today?
I found the traditional heavy cardboard to be much less off-putting than I anticipated it being. I think I've come around to a similar conclusion to you in terms of the board, where I'd like to see a flat board. I don't think I want the raised board. And the two types of resin pieces that we saw in Azul and Hive were not fitting to the vision I have in my head of what I want for our tiles. Even though I think both, one, serve their games really well and are beautiful.
That's a good point.
Are you ready for the other thing?
The other thing. Yes.
I've got a game for you.
I love when you come up with games.
We looked at 9 games today.
Yes.
We're going to play a game with those titles. How much does it cost to buy one of these games?
Oh, I love this.
I'll tell you in advance, I did not price on Amazon.
Oh, good. Okay.
And I'll accept, you can shoot for a range. Most of the games I found...
Oh, no, I'm going exact.
You're going exact.
I'm going exact. You tell me just how far...
Okay.
Price is Right style I am off of this. I'm excited about this. There's no knowledge ahead of time for me that Mark was going to do this.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Game number one, Quirkle, MSRP.
Whew. It's funny. $19.99. It's just wooden pieces. They can't be.
$30 to $35.
What? Really? It's just a bag with some wooden pieces.
Specific art on every one.
No, there's like six different things. There's 90 pieces. There's a lot of pieces. It's like 90 pieces, but there's like six different. That's it. Wow.
That was the quote I found. I probably should have cited my sources, but I'm not going to.
Yeah. Is that like the manufacturer's website? Like
that was the okay. recommended MSRP.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, so well, that's a baseline for everything else. If Quirkle isn't $19.99, I'm also dating myself a little bit, right? How much is a Big Mac? I don't know, $3.20.
Game two, are you ready?
Yeah.
Tack.
It's not tack. I kept saying tack, I think. Tack sounds better. Geez, if Quirkle, this comes with a board, it has custom shapes, $35.
55 to 60.
What? Is happening here.
And that's on the low end because they have all these like fancy versions where you can go up to like my fancy leather board. They did what I was advocating for.
Okay. Wow. We're going to be rich.
Game three, Sagrada.
Oh, Sagrada. Okay. So it comes with a bunch of dice. It's got that punch board. It's got to be less than tie. I can't. Okay. But $39.99.
Ooh, good one. Got it right. Upper end, 35 to 40.
Okay. Yes. Close. Okay.
Game four, Night Cage.
Ooh, this is... Man, the black satin is going to throw us off now. And there's a lot of components in that box. I saw there was a metal key. That game's got to be $70. If Quirkle is... Like, that game's got to be... I'm going to go 75.
40 to 45.
What? Really? How is that?
All that cardboard.
Yeah, you're right. It is mostly cardboard. It has some metal pieces, but okay. That makes me feel a little bit better about our potential landed cost. Because our game is so much less than what was in that box.
And especially weighs size. Much less.
That quad fold board was huge.
And heavy.
Really? I'm shocked by that MSRP.
Game five. Hive.
It's just about 25 Bakelite pieces. But they're heavy, they're big. $30.
$35.
Okay. Not far off.
Game six, Patchwork.
Patchwork. Okay, so this is straight. This is all punch board. There's a couple of wooden pieces. But it has four different boards inside. I'm also going to say $35. Because, yeah, there's a lot. There are a lot of pieces in it.
On the high end, you're right. $30-$35 is what I saw.
Okay.
Game seven, Flamecraft.
Flamecraft's nice. The components are nice. It's a big box. It's a really big... That neoprene mat that rolled out, that was like 3 feet long. A lot of different pieces inside that. $69. It's got to be 65. I'm going to be exact. $69.
Nice. 40,
45. Oh, really? Flamecraft. We have to use whoever they manufactured with. We got to look that one up. I want to use whoever their manufacturer is.
Game eight. Splendor.
Splendor, I should know.
No cheating, you bought it.
I bought it. I feel like I should just know. That's got to be a $30 game. Splendor's just got to be like your standard $30 game.
40.
40. Those pieces are heavy.
Game nine, Azul. Last one.
It's got to be more than Splendor. I'm going to say Azul is $45.
30, 35.
Really? I felt like I would have got better as this game went on. I don't feel like that was the case necessarily. Quirkle threw me off. Quirkle just sent me on a spiral.
It's a little bit hard. I will say I think it's hard because there's kind of the recommended MSRP and then there what are the big box stores selling it for.
Sure.
So again, I stayed away from pricing that was based in places like Amazon and Target. So we're seeing higher prices. But I would also say like I'd be willing to bet screen printing, a lot less expensive than the laser cutting for the Hive pieces, and what my takeaway from watching you play and having done the searching is the complexity of the processing complexity of the pieces is more expensive, is a higher proportion of the expense than what the components are. Because like the laser cut, if you had comparable amount of pieces between Hive and Azul.
We don't. There's way more Azul pieces than there are Hive.
Right, but like you also have like the cardboard boards and you have like the spinny thing. I like imagine if Hive also had like a scoreboard and another piece.
Yeah.
You'd be way up there.
Sure.
So like that, the way the components are processed, I think really does matter.
So hearing all those prices, Mark, and hearing me routinely say, I want to be sub 30, I want to be at 25, I don't know if that's possible. I don't think that's going to be possible.
Oh, I looked at it as actually kind of optimistic.
I mean, I would like to shoot for it, but I'm saying I don't know if it'll be possible.
I think we can do more of the things that we have talked about doing for Under the Sky if we're aiming in that $25 to $30 range for a sale price. I think there's more possible.
Really?
I'm willing to be wrong.
I want you to be right.
But I mean, if even just like take Azul, if Azul is $30 to $35, we're only going to have 27 tiles. We're going to have one board, and we can come up, we can find like the more cost efficient tile processing manner to get our images on our tiles.
Yes, but the one difference there is going to be economies of scale. If you make one copy of a board game, it costs $100.
Sure.
If you make 1,000 copies of a board game, it costs $20, right? It's like, and as you, so Azul can lower its costs because they've made millions of copies. We're not making millions. So our cost is going to be higher per unit than any of these other games that we've talked about because we're making 500. We're making the minimum.
Well, I was going to say, that's going to be another thing that we're going to have to talk about because the companies that we talked to, or the companies that I talked to at Gen Con, I did ask about MOQ, and it's tough to get somebody to agree to doing an MOQ of 500.
Yeah, 1,000 was the minimum that I've come across as the standard minimum. 2,000 was also heavily mentioned.
There were manufacturers that I talked to that said they do 500 MOQ.
Okay. But the cost of that versus 1,000 is significantly different.
Yes, but that is for another night. The Misplay podcast is brought to you by Howley Boy Games. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. We express our humble gratitude and recognize any level of support here on our list of sponsors. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors. Oh, here, I've got a better setup then. Where are we?
We are at Game Parlor. Why are you laughing?
I'm trying to decide if you missed my joke or not.
Where are we? Oh, you skipped some things.
That's how I know you're reading.
There's your outtake.